Dover, 062618. And Ms. Smith, I think the podium is still at the height you desire.
Thank you, Judge. Again, Andrea Smith. May it please the court and counsel. On behalf of Donald Stover, who appeals his 115-month sentence for being a felon in possession, again, on the unreasonableness basis, I know this court is probably getting a little tired of hearing these claims that sentences are unreasonable, especially as they are here, where it was within the guidelines.
Do I recall that he said he was glad he got arrested because he was carrying a gun to shoot somebody?
Yes, Your Honor. Well, he was going to go look at the guy that actually stole his pit bull, I think, is what he said. Yeah. I wasn't clear he was going to go murder him or just go get his pit bull back. I think it wasn't clear.
Because then he was going to kill him.
Your Honor, the guideline range here was 92 to 115, and the statutory max was 120, and the district court gave him the top end of the guideline range, of course. Yeah. Your Honor, it sounds like either the court, and I know the court has read the briefs and is familiar with the facts. There's a fact that jumped out at me last night when I was reading these briefs and the transcripts over. If I may have the court's indulgence. Again, recall, he's charged as felon in possession. He got the high end of the guideline range. In our claim, again, is a de facto mandatory application of the mandatory application of the guidelines. The district court below, did look at some of the 3553 factors looked at them. But the interesting thing about this case is a fact that jumped out at me last night, and with the government's indulgence, I did inform Mr. Leggins and ask him if it was all right with him if I pointed this out. It's not something that I found when I was briefing this case, and this was my case below. And the fact that jumped out at me last night and how this shows that the court was just applying the guidelines in a de facto mandatory.
Quick, get to what jumped out.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Okay. What happened below was my client had herniated disc, and he did not want to ride in the van a three-hour trip from the county jail to the federal courthouse to be sentenced. So he declined to be interviewed by the probation office officer for the PSI, the pre-sentence investigation report. When we got to sentencing in March, the judge, district court, said, how can I, and he said in the record, and that's it found at page 22 to 24, that March 2005 hearing transcript, 2006 sentencing transcript, and the district court below said, how can I figure out what kind of fine to put on him because he hasn't been interviewed? I don't know what kind of fine to give him. I don't know about his financial issues because he has not been interviewed. That's all the district court said. At that point, the district court addressed my client and said, Mr. Stover, why weren't you interviewed? Why don't you want to be interviewed and have some of this other information in the PSI? And and Mr. Stover said to the judge, it's because I didn't want to ride in the van for 3 hours and be bounced because I have a herniated disc and it was too uncomfortable. So I just declined to come to the court, and the probation officer doesn't go out to that far of a county jail. So the judge says, well, I think we need this information. So he did agree to be interviewed, and then the sentencing was continued until June. Now, what's interesting about that is the only fact that jumped out at the district court that made him think, why didn't you give us the mitigating factors, your history, your background, that your father died in prison, that your mother abandoned you, that you lived all these years in foster homes? None of that information was in the PSI because my client had not been interviewed.
But it was there. The judge had that information at hand when he sentenced him.
Of course he did, Your Honor.
Yeah.
But my point is in March of 2005, when the court said, how can I figure out what kind of fine, how do I know what kind of fine to give your client, Ms. Smith, since he hasn't been interviewed and I don't have any idea about his assets or his debts? The court was not concerned about history, characteristics, any mitigating evidence.
The thing is, when the sentencing came, he addressed these issues. He addressed his history and characteristics. He addressed the lack of guidance, the lack of a good role model, no nurturing mother and father. About how he goes from one foster care facility to another. I mean, I understand that he didn't cooperate initially, and I understand why, and that was told to the court, but the court considered it. I mean, it'd be one thing if the sentencing had taken place when it was originally scheduled, but the court kicked it to get the information.
But you know what my point is, Judge? Is I think the district court already had in his mind, in its mind, in March of 2006, what sentence it was going to give based on the guideline sentence, the advisory guideline sentence, and my client's criminal history. Because the only fact that the judge was concerned about with in terms of issuing a sentence that day in March of 2006 was the financial condition of my client in terms of his fine. So the judge already had in his mind, based on his criminal history and based on the crime here, what he had in the PSI. So the information that was given later, which was a mitigating in nature and gave the lack of youthful guidance, the abandonment, the foster homes, his father dying in prison, all that information that actually goes to the first factor under the 3553 factors, the nature and characteristics of a client, of a defendant before he's sentenced. The primary information came in later, but the judge was only worried about the fine condition. So my contention is I think the record supports that the judge already had, the district court already had in his mind what sentence he was going to give in March in terms of the imprisonment, not the fine. He already had in his mind what term of imprisonment he was going to impose based on my client's admittedly bad criminal history and the guideline range. And he already had that in mind. The only thing he worried about was, what am I going to do about the fine? And I think the record supports that. So, of course, later on he came back with the mitigating information. He had more information at his hand and still gave him the high end of the guideline range. So when we argue here, as defense counsel has been doing now for a year and a half since Booker, that sentences are unreasonable, I think actually the record in this case indicates that the court already had his mind made up, and it was a guideline sentencing, and he was going to give the high end of the guideline range. Now, one of the other facts that jump out at me, of course, and the court didn't really consider, and he talked about my client's 25 criminal history points, but the court did not pay attention that 15 of those points were accumulated by my client when he was 17 years old in a four-month period when he was running around and he was basically out of control. And that had to do, of course, with his...
The court also considered what he said at the time of his arrest. He was armed with a loaded shotgun, was on his way to kill somebody who stole his dog.
Yes, Your Honor. Of course, that's probably one of the factors that...
Is this man a very dangerous man?
Well, clearly that's what the district court thought, Your Honor.
Don't you?
Take the fifth.
Judge Bauer just saved me, Judge Coffey. I will decline to answer that question, but I think...
On the grounds of the magic incriminates, is that right?
Might interfere with the attorney-client relationships.
I will save my time for rebuttal, if I may. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Leggins?
Good morning again, Your Honors. I just have really a brief point to make. The district court in this case, the only issue before this court is whether the sentence imposed in this case was reasonable, because it is clear on the record that the court did go through the 3553 matters in a meticulous manner. And I just don't know how a court could conclude that the sentence imposed in this case was anything other than reasonable. As this court has already pointed out this morning, this defendant did have 25 criminal history points. Some of those offenses were recent. Some of his priors were violent, and he possessed the gun in this case by his own admission because he was going to go shoot somebody. If under these circumstances, if this wasn't a reasonable sentence, then I don't know that this court would ever be able to find a sentence was reasonable. So with that, Your Honors, I would yield the rest of my time.
All right. Thank you. How much time? 2 minutes, Ms. Smith.
I'll just make one more point, if I may, Your Honors, and that is that at 17 years old when my client accumulated more than half of his criminal history points versus 31 years old when he was sentenced. At that point had formed a family and had a new daughter and now had some ties and something to make him...
Even own a dog.
Yes, he did have a dog, Judge. But my point is, of course, the statistics are clearly that the likelihood of recidivism goes down as people get older. And recidivism goes down as people have more ties to the community and family obligations, and they calm down and their brains have gone down from the wild hormonal issues of 17 years old when he went on this rampage and broke into cars and gas stations when he got more than half of his criminal history points. So clearly this Mr. Stover was on a different road at that point. He had a daughter he was helping take care of. He wrote a very poignant letter to the court talking about his family obligations and how he, now that he had a daughter, he was going to try to get over his prior wild life and criminal life. And I think that, that was very sincere on my client's part when he said that. So I think those issues should have come into play in terms of the sentence here that the judge gave. Thank you very much.
Right. Thank you again, Ms. Smith, for taking this appointment on. It's been a great service to the court. We appreciate your efforts, and thank you, Mr. Leggins, for your fine argument. We will take the case under advisement.